Coming to you live from an igloo, I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is Butt Frostbite, and this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 7.9, it is because the toilet is made of ice, you see.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm Tom Rich.
And this week we have an exciting new game for you, and I'm two beers and half a gin and tonic deep, so either I'm going to fall asleep or this is going to be awesome.
yeah, here we go.
Or both.
So tonight's game is the hit new game that just finished up its Kickstarter and finally delivered on it from Black Oak Games, Not Dice.
That's not with a K? So they are dice.
Damn it. We were going to do the whole, no, they are dice. No, it's called Not Dice, but they are dice bit. We were going to go back and forth for like 15 minutes, and you ruined the whole thing.
You're welcome, listeners.
yes, Not Dice from Black Oak Games. It was a Kickstarter that how long ago did we back this?
2 years, close to 2 years.
Is it really that long?
Yeah, because it's one of these ones that I'm aware the game creator has been very good about maintaining contact with us through Kickstarter, mm-hmm. through email, to like let all the backers know what's going on in the production process. But it's one of these ones that I look at it and I go, I don't remember why I backed this. Mm-hmm. I was clearly very excited about it, but I don't even know how I found it in the first place.
Sure.
And now we have it.
It's here. It showed up.
It's how Kickstarter it's works sometimes.
Right. So, the creator had some trouble, I think it was, with getting the dice for the game to be made to his specifications. Like, there were a lot of...
He's gone through, I think, three different manufacturers.
Yeah. So, but they arrived. So, you know, dreams do come true eventually. So, the game consists of a set of 18 dice of a fairly hefty size, I would say.
Yep.
Each of which has the patterns of a Celtic knot twining across it, making its way across the various faces of the dice. Each face is a different part of an overall Celtic knot pattern, whether it's a corner or a intersection across, or a link, or just a straight line, or a point. And we've got a picture up on the show notes of what that looks like if nothing I'm saying makes any sense to you. I don't know how to describe a Celtic knot with words.
Yeah, if you look for Celtic knot, you'll if you've never seen one, you've seen one. Mm-hmm. If you don't know that it's called that, you'll look at it and go, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so it has these different faces on them with different stuff. It's got that. It's got eight little tokens that you can use. And they're very nice little wooden tokens with a Celtic knot printed on them. And then it has two books, a book of puzzles and a book of games. And each one contains a bunch of different activities that you can do with your set of knot dice. So it's not so much a game as it is a... like an activity center, you might call it?
I guess.
Were you inclined to call things activity centers?
I'm not.
You might be.
If you were British, you might be inclined to call them leisure centers. That's what they call like a community center, or like if there's like a pool. Mm-hmm. It's the leisure center.
Is it really?
It makes it feel really creepy when you go there.
Yeah, I don't...
I'm going to go and engage in some leisure. Are you creeped out yet?
I'm a little creeped out. Like, I don't really want to be in your house now.
Yeah.
But I am.
Well, but does it make you feel better that I engage in leisure elsewhere?
That, it does, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't... So, like, do they wear leisure suits?
I can only imagine.
I'm not sure I'm even that fond of Britain now.
Right. I've been telling you all along. But Celtic Knot Dice, he's right. It's got a number of puzzles, a number of games. I got the impression that some of the games were designed by different people.
Yes, there was a team of designers that made all the stuff, and each game or puzzle is credited to whoever did it. So we have not done every puzzle or played every.
Not. I'm going to do that every time.
You're a. Oh my god. so we haven't done.
Haven't.
done every puzzle or played every game, but we've done a sampling of them to get a sense of what's going on. Some of the puzzles are pretty straightforward of the, you have these faces up on your dice, slide them around until you make a complete Celtic knot variety. Some are more complicated. Some of the games are the same way where you and your opponent are racing to do it. So, you want to just what do you want to start with, Giannis? How do you want to approach this?
We should probably start with the puzzles because they're simpler,
mm-hmm.
and then go to the few games that we've played at any rate. It seemed like most of the puzzles were based in part around, if you've ever played one of those sliding picture puzzles,
mm-hmm.
where you have like a 4x4 grid of pieces or whatever, but one of them is missing, so you can always slide one around.
Mm-hmm.
There's always an open space, but you need to move all the tiles around to get the picture completed in the right order. It's kind of like that. There's not usually a missing piece, but you're generally, depending on the rules in the puzzle, sliding and or rotating pieces
mm-hmm.
to go from either a randomized or a preset tangle of just
gibberish.
If not random, then at least gibberish. Yeah, pieces to create one or two cohesive Celtic knots mm-hmm. where the pieces all tie together and look nice.
Some of them have you score how well you do based on how many moves you can complete it in. Some don't.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, the ones that scored it, I didn't bother to keep track after the first couple because I stopped caring.
Yeah.
But you can if that's your jam, if you want to try to do it.
I feel like with a puzzle like that, I even hesitate to say the fun, but the engagement is more, can I do it and maybe how fast can I do it?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have done it enough times and still have it hold your interest, I think, to care enough to be like, okay, how many moves can I do it in?
Sure.
It's more just, can I figure out this puzzle? Oh, look, I did it, and it looks nice, and the dice are really nice.
The pieces
are very nice to handle. It's just a pleasure to roll them and hold mm-hmm. them and use them in whatever way.
And when you do slide them into the form of a completed Celtic knot, it's very visually satisfying.
It's actually shocking how you'll have, say you're making a piece that's just four dice and you have three of them together and you're like, I think I know what this is going to look like when I put the fourth piece into place, but at least, and tell me if you didn't have this experience, but you slide the fourth one into place and suddenly you have one cohesive knot.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, my brain would just like click and be like, oh, that's what it looked like. And what I was visualizing, even if it was accurate, was never as striking as seeing it in front of me.
Yeah. It's impressive how well four dice sitting next to each other look like one cohesive picture to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like you're assembling a thing of components. Well, you are, but it clicks together really well, and I think that's a testament to how much effort the designers and Black Oak Games put into getting the right physical dice for it,
mm-hmm.
And making sure that they were made to a very high standard of quality. Because one of the things that could really have ruined it would be if the actual knot, the shapes on mm-hmm. the face of the dice didn't line up well.
Yeah.
And they do consistently. Like it hits right like that, and that's good. It looks really good.
Yep. Agreed. I was sorry, I zoned for a second. I was trying to find out if these are actually available for purchase for non-Kickstarter backers.
Oh, good call.
It looks like we'll post it in the show notes, but Black Oak Games website has a mailing list sign up. They do plan to make them available for purchase early 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So they will be available for those of you who missed the Kickstarter.
Perfect. So those are the puzzles. There's a lot of different, they have a lot of different ways and a lot of different rules of how you can move the dice around and mm-hmm. this, and sometimes you're not building on a flat plane, but you're building on a wall instead, which is kind of neat. So you're building up, variety of stuff. The games, we tried three or four of them, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think we did three.
Yeah. And they tend to be of the take turns placing a die into some sort of pattern and try to be the one who does, who reaches a certain goal with it first, whether that's complete the picture or complete the knot or something like that. Some of them are co-op. Some of them are not.
I don't understand. What's the joke?
Well, it's because they're not.
The word you want is competitive. Some of them are cooperative and some
but
of them
I was,
are.
They're called not dice, and I said not, but the other kind of not.
I don't follow.
But, fine. So the co-op game we played had us each taking turns rolling a die and then trying to add it to the knot die, or to the Celtic knot in the middle,
mm-hmm.
trying to make the most compact knot with the most dice we could manage. So we were trying to get as many in there before we ran out of dice and had to end it. Had to end the Celtic knot. And so we did okay at that. That was kind of fun. We just went back and forth. We're trying to build it. We're like, oh, but if you put it there, this will happen. And, oh, but you don't want to do that because it'll make our score go down because there's a penalty. And it was kind of neat. It's simple.
It wasn't super engaging, but it wasn't boring. Most of what we spent our time thinking about was, having not played this game yet all the way through, we know there are penalties here and there's a possibility of just outright losing because you did something wrong and weren't able to close off the loop or something like that. And we're just like, oh, well, we want to make sure we hang on to that piece and don't use it. Maybe we should use this piece now, but maybe we should hang on to it. We don't really
might
know.
Want it later
it
on.
Was pretty simple strategy, but it was fun enough.
It was pleasant. It was very pleasant.
Yeah.
There was another one we played called Snakes, where we started out with a few dice on the table each. Next
this was
to
a competitive
other.
One.
This is competitive, yeah. And this was cool because it did some interesting stuff with the components and kind of showcased the variety you get in mm-hmm. this box. And so on your turn in Snakes, you would roll your dice. I'm sorry, there weren't turns in Snakes. Everybody would roll their dice, both players. And then you would try to add straight line or curve pieces to your snake, to one end of your snake that you already had on the table. And so you couldn't branch at all. You were just making one long line, but it might bend and twist all over the place. And the neat thing here was you could push your luck, because if you rolled a piece that you couldn't add to your snake, you could add the pieces you were allowed to and then re-roll.
Mm-hmm.
But there were rules for maybe you're going to roll too many times and not be able to place it, and the snake bites you, and bad things happen.
If at any point you roll your dice and cannot place any of them by the rules, then you get bitten by the snake.
And then once you give up and you say, no, I'm done, I'm not going to roll again, you move your token along your snake to forward on it, further down the snake. And then you scoop from the back of the snake to make more dice, to have more dice in your pool to roll. And then you and your friend play another round. And then you play...
Six rounds.
Six rounds. And the player whose snake got further wins. And so it's kind of neat because it gets a lot of mileage out of a very small number of components.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not... It uses two of the eight tokens to track the snakes and how far you're going. And then the other six you just use to track how many turns you've done. And you just... You know, set them aside as you play, and then you know how many turns you've got left. Awesome. Great use of components there.
Yeah.
It forces you to make some interesting decisions, because if your snake is all bendy, it's not going as far to... It's going the same total distance in dice, but not across the table. So you know, you're like, oh, I guess my snake, he's not getting as far. And then you're going to lose, because he's got to get as far. The push your luck mechanic works really well.
Yeah.
There was a point at the end where we were on our last round and Johannes had stopped. He's like, no, I'm going to cap off my snake and be done. I'm like, well, I just got to keep pushing my luck and trying to get all my dice down so my snake can catch your snake. And my snake didn't catch his snake, but that's okay.
But it was near. It was a near thing.
It was near. So the push your luck mechanic led to a good catch up mechanic a little bit there. Or the means to catch up, even if you had some rough earlier turns. The one problem Snake ran into... And this is an issue with the kind of minimalist components you're looking at, was that your two snakes start out right next to each other, and at no point can your snake move into the other snake's side, so you can never go up past where you started toward the other guy. But if your snakes diverge a lot, it becomes very difficult to remember where that line is.
Yeah.
So you could play it on a table where that line could be delineated by like a if it's a folding table.
A seam in the table.
Yeah, or you could use a piece of paper or something. But it seemed like it wanted something to mark that.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty piddly complaint. Snakes was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that.
I mean, if those ones sound too simplistic, there was actually the one that we played, and there may be more in there. There's one that we played that was fairly strategic, where you're kind of a head scratcher.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what it was called?
The one where you were...
The 3x3 grid, and it was something about untangling or yarn tangle or...
Oh, yeah. Celtic Yarn was it
Celtic Yarn.
Yeah.
And you had... There was a preset...
It was just a scramble.
Well, there was a preset number, though, because you could only have one of two types of sides showing at the beginning.
Yep.
And then, again, somewhat similar to those sliding puzzles. So there's a 3x3 grid of dice on the table with one of two sides facing up that you've scrambled together and put in place. And then you each have one die, and you roll it so it can be any of the faces, and one player can slide in from the top or the bottom on their turn, and the other player can only slide in from the left or the right on their turn. Mm-hmm. And you have to try to make a, not really a knot because it doesn't meet back up with itself, but a path that you can trace through the Celtic knot that has to start on one side and end on a different side, not mm-hmm. necessarily the opposing side, but not the same side, that is at least four dice long. Mm-hmm. And it has to, as you look at the dice, there are paths that go over or under one another. So it has to be an open top. Mm-hmm. It has to be an on top on both sides. And that turned out to be fairly difficult.
It was a real brain burner.
Tom made this comment, and I was thinking the same thing as we were playing. It was a lot like the first few times we played Push Fight, where it was just trying to figure out how this game really works. Like, what moves can I make that aren't just going to give the other player space to do what they need to do? So
yeah.
You don't want to take your turn setting yourself up for 3 out of 4, because then on the next turn, the other player can use what you set up and get the fourth and win, maybe.
Right.
But since each of you can only move your pieces in two of the four directions, mm-hmm. you might be looking at it going, I got you there. Oh, wait, I can't. There's no way for me to put my die in mm-hmm. that space. I just can't do it.
I found, too, that a lot of the time I had a die that I wanted in a certain space, but there was no way for me to get it there without moving another die that I needed
to be. That you also needed in that space.
Yeah, where yes. it was. And I'm like, it was difficult. It was difficult. Grabbed my attention. A lot of fun. Very good. That was a really good one.
I ended up, as is typical, I think, of this sort of game where you're really kind of stretching yourself to try to figure out how the strategy even works on the first couple plays. Mm-hmm. I won totally by accident. I was trying to set up a different victory that I thought I might be able to put into place on my next turn. Mm-hmm. And just it was this thing where I'm trying to visualize what it looks like when all the dice are actually in place, but I didn't quite get there. And then I pushed it into place and it was like the picture kind of opened up and Tom saw it before I did. He's mm-hmm. like, you got it. I'm like, no, I didn't. Cause look, it doesn't work. And he's like, no, look at the other side. And Trace said, I was like, oh yeah, I won by accident. But it was fun.
It was a lot of fun, yeah.
And I think has a lot of replay value. Like, strategically, it mm-hmm. works as a, like, sort of chess-style
yes.
game.
We did another one where each player started with 4 dice, and then there were 5 more in the middle. And you would roll your dice simultaneously and then try to make a complete knot out of them.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
And you could keep re-rolling until you got what you needed to make a knot, and then the first player to get a knot would say, what was it, not done?
Not done, yeah.
Yeah, with a K, not an N, because if you said it with just the N, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, why would you tell me that? Everyone would be shouting not done all the time. I'm not done!
And so then once you finish it, the other player checks it and confirms that you're not a big cheater, and then you get to take a dice from the middle, and then you have to roll that extra dice on the next round. So you're slowed up a little bit by winning on a given round. And you keep playing until all the dice have been claimed and the player with the most dice wins.
Yeah.
So that was cool, I thought, because it's a fun puzzle. Like, it's tactically fun to try to twist them around and make your dice. It's got that frantic kind of push your lucky, just really
roll
quick
and
die
roll and roll because you keep trying to get the roll yeah. that you want.
It was like Escape from the Temple or a Space Alert or those kind of real-time games yeah. where you're scrambling to do stuff.
Yeah, simultaneous play is fun.
Yeah, and then it had a great, great catch-up mechanic because, you know, I got ahead of Johannes in the first couple of rounds.
Right.
But then I'm trying to fiddle with 7 or 8 dice. Well, he's still only got 4 or 5,
yeah.
so I'm slowed up just by virtue of getting ahead.
Having more pieces to work with because yeah. you're, yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
It's pretty elegant. It worked well.
Yeah, it was quick and it was fun. And, you know, it's not a game that's going to. There's not going to be a tournament, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but it's a good one. It's quality.
It's definitely a number of games that you could very easily whip out early in the night or like between games, like or if you have some people want to play one thing but it doesn't mm-hmm. support enough, the other two people could be perfectly happy not just sitting over there at a table playing one game, but mm-hmm. having, you know.
Yeah.
14 games to choose from without having to put one away and pull out another one because it all uses the same pieces. Just turn the page in your rule book.
Or if Gary shows up at your house, you know, half an hour early for a board game day
yeah.
and you want to play a game that you're not going to mind just putting away midway through
yeah, yeah.
if somebody shows up. Like, you're not going to be so invested that you're going to be like, oh, we want to finish this before we can get started with the rest of the day.
But also it's fast enough that if you do want to finish it, it's like wait 5 minutes, not wait 5 hours.
Yeah, you could probably finish it while they're all getting putting their coats away.
Yeah.
And whatnot. Yeah, it's pretty good.
If you have multiple sets, it opens up. So some of the games I think already work with the base set with more than two players.
Yeah, it just depends on how many dice they call for.
And then some of them add another set, and now you can add, you know, you can have four players or right. whatever it is.
There's also a lot of cases where there is a game that you can play and it's just a game, and then the next game in the book is like, let's make that a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
So you can add a little more depth to it once you've gotten the hang of one, or if one doesn't, you know, quite scratch your itch, maybe the next one up the chain will.
The first one we played was called Kells, and then they build on that. So there's Book of Kells, or Kells the Book, they call it, the mm-hmm. Book of Kells. And then there's the Kells the Abbey, and I think there might be another one beyond that. And they're sort of changed the rules a little bit, but also, like, you basically play the initial game, and then you lose any dice you had left over. And then you play that game again with fewer dice, and then you lose any dice you had left over. And then you play that. And so it gets progressively more difficult, and then you score out all your rounds once you can't play anymore, something like that. So it can take a game that was quick and short and over into a longer game where now you're thinking of it sort of the long game. You know, you're saying, okay, yeah, this is a good move now, but is there a better move that's going to leave us with more dice next game or in three games or whatever it is? It's pretty good.
So on the whole, you know, you're not going to redefine your gaming group with Knot Dice. It's not going to be, you know, the sort of table buster that defines a summer of board game playing for you. But it's a lot of fun. The dice themselves are really pleasant to have in your hand, and it's they look nice.
I feel like they're the sort of dice, they do, they look really nice. Like if ever I decided, and I don't think this is something that would happen, but if ever I decided, like, I don't need to play Knot Dice anymore, I've done all of the games enough times, I'm done with it, it wouldn't sit in a box somewhere. Like, my wife would make jewelry out of them, or I would, like, have one in my pocket to fidget with. They're really nice. They look really nice. They're well made. They're probably 25, 28 millimeter. I think they're bigger than a 25 millimeter D6. And they're really quality. Like, they're nice to look at. They're nice to hold. They're nice to use. They're hefty. It's a quality product.
My one beef with them might be that they're single use and that they only really work for this game. But apparently, I was looking on their website earlier. Apparently, one of the things they want to come out with down the line is not the same dice, but with numbers on them too, so that you could use them for D&D or whatever game you want. So cool.
Yeah. And they're kind of like, they're probably not quite as versatile, but they're like playing cards, or I guess regular dice, but in that you can probably reasonably make up another game that works with them.
Sure.
I mean, the book is full of games that multiple designers built around this, the different faces of these dice. It probably wouldn't be loads of work to create your own game or variation on an existing game using these dice and have a whole new thing that you can do with them.
Yeah.
So
the games teach fast. You know, I don't think it took us more than a pass on anyone given a game to learn it. You can probably find one that will make sense to whoever you want to play a game with. You know, there's a good variety of complexity and whatnot in there. And it's very impressive the amount of use they get out of a very small amount of components. It's 18 dice, 6 tokens. And occasionally they've got a spread in the middle of each of the two books. One side is a board, just a grid of squares that you could put dice on. And the other side is just a score tracker that you could use a token to track the score on.
Yeah.
So I guess if that sounds like your cup of tea, like, you'll have a good time with Knot Dice.
Like we said, we'll post the Kickstarter, which is over, but has all the videos and explanations and stuff. We'll post the Kickstarter. We'll post the Black Oak Games page in the show notes. Was there anything else we said we were going to put in there?
Just the picture.
Yeah, we've got a picture. Snap a couple other pictures.
Yeah.
And, check them out. It was fun. We like them. Two thumbs up from me.
Yep. So after a wait, never mind. I'm not even going to finish that sentence. It completely got away from me.
They've broken Tom's brain as well, so that's a plus. Who am I kidding? It was broken all along.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm here for you. So we'll be back in a bit. with Theme Ballin', which is our next segment. But in the meantime,
Thomas Theme Ballin'. Theme Ballin'.
If you would like to contact us to let Tom know that he shouldn't try to sing on the podcast anymore, you could do that on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You could do it by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
On the website in the comment section at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or just Google Tom Should Stop Singing. There's like a whole club dedicated to it. Like
pages and pages of
They'll results. Set you up with a time to phone bank and to write letters to congressmen and popes and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole thing, trust me.
In fact, Tom singing is the reason the last pope quit before he died. We'll be right back. But I never go first. Reg goes first. Where is Reg?
Yeah, but you go first. You're the senior... It's fine. Don't worry about it. I can go first. This is a mildly alarming radio news breaking news break. I'm Chuck Hortuckle, sitting in for Reginald St. Kevin.
And I'm Chep Holstein. Bad evening. In local news, there is a different man at the news desk with me who refuses to explain where Reginald St. Kevin has gone. Sources close to the situation describe it as very distressing and also ominous. Reached for comment at the desk, Chuck Hortuckle said, quote, "It's fine. Don't worry about it."
Thank you, Chep. And in sports news, a gorilla devoured the entire Cleveland Browns football team during a halftime show today. Which is unusual because gorillas are not carnivorous, and there were no gorillas present at the game. Reached for comment, the coach of the opposing Pittsburgh Steelers said, quote, "We played pretty good football today, pretty good football, wind us some football, pretty good football." The Browns defeated the Steelers 35-7.
In kidnapping news, I'm so very scared that my friend Reg has been kidnapped and is in a basement somewhere. I hope that they have lights on because he is scared of the dark.
In co-anchor news, mine is a moron. I went to Juilliard for this.
In rudeness news, you're rude, Chuck, and that hurts my feelings.
Thanks for the update, Chep. This has been your mildly alarming radio news breaking news break. I'm Chuck Hortuckle.
And I'm Desperate Seth.
For God's sake, he had his appendix out. Jim is driving you over there to bring him ice cream right after the show.
That is an excellent point. Good evening.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johanna Stauffer.
And we have a segment for you today.
It is a segment.
A segment that will excite you, enthrite you.
That's a word.
And fight you.
It will fight you.
It's gonna. You're going to want to put up your dukes as this segment gets going because it's coming for you.
Wear some pads or goggles, maybe one of those... face guards like that basketball guy.
Listen, it ain't fight fair either. It's gonna go right for your nose. It's gonna be its target.
Right in the nosal area.
Right in the nasal parts. It's
nasal
gonna aim for it.
It's the same thing as nosal.
The nosal and nasal mean the same word.
Watch your nose. That's the take.
So we're stalling for time here so you can get ready. So you can get your dukes up and be prepared for the topic that's about to hit you.
You ready?
It's coming in hot.
Are you ready?
You gotta answer.
Here it comes.
It's coming in. You ready? You want to do it?
Time's up. Do it.
Theme ball! Lynn.
We're theme balling.
We're theme balling. We're going to theme ball. That's what's happening here tonight. For those not in the know, theme balling is the segment where each one of us throws a theme or balls it, if you will, to the other guy, and the other guy has to expound upon a game that might work with that theme. That's it. That's the whole segment.
That's the whole thing.
It's a good segment.
We like it.
It's fun. We have a pretty good time with
it. No one else has ever told us whether they do or don't, so we continue doing it.
To be fair, no one else has ever told us whether they do or don't like anything we do.
One time, Chep said he liked one of the segment. Chip, not Chep. Chep is a different person than Chep.
Isn't Chep a fictional character on the show?
No, he's totally real.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I like Chep.
He's Chep Holstein.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Chip said, didn't Chip like Wrong About Books?
He did.
Yeah.
And so, since he told us that, we have continued to not do any Wrong About Books segments.
And didn't your mom once tell us that she hated the Crime Mummy bits?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so we know those
things. She may have mentioned vomit.
Yeah.
It's possible.
That's true.
She's lovely.
She's a very nice lady.
So we're theme balling.
So no mummies, but lots of books.
Yep.
That's kind of the theme.
So your theme is books. No, I'm kidding.
That's what people, and your theme is mummies. That's what people, your theme is anything but mummies.
You give me mummies. He's like, your mom already loves you, so we're going to give you the thing she hates.
Because I want to ruin your happiness.
Did we finish explaining what theme balling is? We didn't.
I think we did.
We ball a theme.
And then you talk about it.
Yeah. We try to make a game based on the theme.
Yeah, I said that.
Okay. We were there.
We're there. It's all set up.
Then I forgot.
It's fine.
Due to ADHD and drinking.
ADHD.
In an amount which you can discern on your own.
ADHD stands for a dog has dyslexia.
It's true. They do. All of them. And they can't look
no,
up.
No, just one. It's A, not all.
It was a poorly constructed. It's not an acronym. It's an initialism.
Oh.
Or is it the other way around? Dang it. One of them actually, I think acronym.
It has to be a word.
Acronym has to be a word. Initialism is just we took the first letter of each thing and made it into a string of letters.
That's fair.
Don't work.
That makes sense.
Yep, that's the thing.
Yep.
NASA is an acronym.
Is it?
ADHD is an initialism?
Because NASA isn't a word. Like
right, but you can say it.
Oh, so you have to be able to say it.
I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what I've
neither of us
deduced.
Is a trained... You can just fill
person.
In the blank. Yeah, we're not. We haven't learned in time that we've spent. But theme ball. Let's theme ball. All right, let's move along. Let's ball some theme.
Would you like to present your game first, or would you like to give me a theme and make a
game? I feel
out
like
of it?
I theme. I feel like I receive your theme first a lot of the times.
Sure.
So let me baste you in my theme.
Baste me
first. Are you ready?
I believe so.
Okay. I don't know what that meant. What I said. So I'm just gonna tell it to you with my mouth.
Yeah.
It's probably more pleasant than the other
thing.
Than
whatever basting is.
Right? Your theme is dragons and spaceships.
This already sounds like the best game I've ever heard of.
I want to play it two times.
I'll play it forever. We can just not play other... We can play Big Man sometimes because that's probably my favorite game.
I can make a Big Man expansion that is dinosaurs and spaceships. Yeah, dragons
I
and spaceships.
We can do that. Honestly, a Big Man expansion that involves any of those things in any combination would probably be great. But we'll go with Dragons and Spaceships as its own standalone game at this
point. And dinosaurs are not involved at all.
Unless you are of the opinion that dinosaurs and dragons are similar or the same.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll go with dragons and spaceships. And there's nothing bad I could do with this. Every game that could be made with this theme is fantastic.
It's true. Science has proven it.
I'm going to go with a simplistic dragons versus spaceships. And so it's going to be a combat game where dragons fight spaceships.
I would like a dragon to fight a spaceship.
And it might go a little Euro, honestly, but who cares because the theme is so great. The theme is so great.
It is a good theme.
So spaceships have weapons and potentially shields and, you know, technology in general, and dragons just have, like, scales, and they can breathe fire, or, you know, depending on the fantasy that you subscribe to, maybe acid or other things.
Force dragons can breathe a cone of pure force.
It's just force. It just pushes things?
It hurts them, too.
Yeah. It would have to, or it's not an effective, super effective weapon. I guess it's an effective, I don't want to fight you right now, go away. And then you go away. That works. But at any rate, dragons can breathe things.
Dragons
fly.
Breathe a cloud of pure dragons.
And spaceships have, you know, thrusters and potentially energy weapons or torpedoes. Sometimes rail guns because bullets just aren't all that fun in space. And I think you can pit those against one another. I think you would really take any setting, be it space or atmospheric, and pit these things against one another because you have this wonderful setting where energy shields, great, they absorb whatever you feel like them absorbing, but dragons just have scales, except there's magic because dragons are magic.
Dragons are magic. It's proven.
And Arthur C. Clarke, who is a fantastic, and I think now dead, but still fantastic, sci-fi author, created Clarke's Three Laws, which apply to magic and science as they look to different mm-hmm. levels of development in humanity, or I guess it doesn't have to be humanity, but
elf manity.
It could be dog manity. Really, any of the manatees.
Mm-hmm.
Any of the manatees.
Any manatee that you want.
Manatee, which
it's double manatee.
Yeah, double. But pertinent to this particular game is any sufficiently advanced technologies indistinguishable from magic. So while spaceships may have energy shields,
dragons have magic in their scales that works in a similar way.
Or whatever you want. It's magic.
A wizard did it.
He is a wizard. So now they can fight one another. And at least in a one-on-one combat game, you could have dragons versus spaceships. But I feel like you could... I'm going to say it's a planet. There's a planet, maybe like a medieval level planet, but it's ruled by dragons because, you know, they have magic and they're dragons and they breathe things,
mm-hmm.
fire or acid or other dragons. And,
that's and how they reproduce.
Maybe they're being invaded by... we'll say it's humans. Why not? Easy enough. We don't have to deal with what kind of powers do the people driving the ships have,
mm-hmm.
right? So humans from another world are invading a planet ruled by dragons, but maybe peopled by
people,
similarly humanoid peons. And on this world, different dragon sects, whatever,
mm-hmm.
are also at war with one another. So now we don't have to say it's just dragons versus spaceships. Dragons can also fight one another. So everyone can, it could be an everyman or dragon or spaceship for himself kind of game. And you have to fight off the dragons. Nope, you have to fight off the spaceships
mm-hmm.
from your planet.
Are all players dragons or are some players spaceships?
At least one player is spaceships. Mm. I feel like a case could be made for multiple races with spaceships with different kind of powers.
That's interesting. Because I would have thought, like if it were me,
uh-huh.
with my broken brain, I would have been like, okay, well, I'm going to do one player is the dragon with the cool dragon powers because it's a dragon is an individual. But the spaceship has to have multiple people driving it, so I'm going to put multiple players driving the spaceship and cooperating to drive their spaceship. But you have potentially like three dragon players fighting a player who's controlling the whole spaceship flotilla.
Yeah.
Which is a different approach, and I like that about it.
Yeah, or even multiple flotillas that could also be fighting one another. We'll say for, you know, thematic reasons mm-hmm. that there is some sort of element or crystal or device on this planet that everyone wants. The dragons who live on this planet have been seeking to control it and fighting with one another.
The Stone of MacGuffin.
The Stone of MacGuffin. Perfect. The humans in the spaceships, the humanoids in the spaceships, think of it as unobtainium because sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Stone of MacGuffin to the planet dwellers. And, you know, mix and match as you feel. But I think on the planet, as you choose, you're going to have ice dragons and fire dragons mm-hmm. and acid dragons. And then as the space dwelling players come in, you might have some that have heavily armored their spaceships, but don't have energy shields. So they're not great against the acid dragons, but they're pretty okay against the fire dragons.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have some coming in with energy shields, but not a lot of armor plating because they're like, we got these energy shields, who cares? But that doesn't really do anything for you against temperature changes. Nope, that doesn't work. They fly in a vacuum of space. They're electricity lightning dragons.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing that I created just right now.
Mm-hmm.
So their shields, just like you zap them and they're gone. So you've got a little bit of that rock, paper, scissors kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's better against who? And there might be some other changes in the different elemental variances, but you got to fight and win and get the Stone of MacGuffin. And you might not necessarily destroy everyone else, but if you can get the Stone of MacGuffin out to wherever.
Mm-hmm. To the jump point.
To the jump point, if you're a human, you've got to have some way that you can permanently seal it for yourself, or at least long-term seal it for yourself as a dragon. Because otherwise, the dragons on the planet are just like, well, we're screwed.
We just have to
defend forever.
Yeah, you do need to invent some plot means by which they can.
You know what it is?
Hmm.
Wizard. Done. Magic is the best.
It's why I write fantasy and not sci-fi.
Right?
Sci-fi takes too damn much research.
And you know what? I could go so many ways with this game, and it doesn't matter. I'd play it because especially as a game mechanic, not just thematically, uh-huh. as a game mechanic, as a writing mechanic, it's pretty good. But like, it's fun if you explain how your magic works, but if mm-hmm. you don't, like, whatever, it's magic. Mm-hmm. But as a game mechanic, it's great to be able to, like, say, because magic happened. Magic, go away. You won. The magic did the thing, and now magic protect the magic thing. Go away, spaceships. There's enough magic now.
We have the amount of magic wasn't enough before, and now it is.
We made enough magic.
There's now enough, and it's magic, so it doesn't have to go away ever. It's just there.
You magicked it.
The magic is done.
Which is it's a verb.
They took care of it. It's fine.
This reminds me, as a board game, of the game Horde that we played occasionally to play more of, where you're dragons and you have to, I think, accrue the most treasure. It's a computer game called Horde. Horde, like a treasure horde, not like a horde of orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And you fly around and you destroy towns and kill knights and things. And if you destroy, or if you damage but not destroy a town enough,
mm-hmm.
they like become your sort of your town, like they pay tribute to you, and so you get more money for your dragon horde.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. But then there are spaceships too. So the spaceships would need, it doesn't have to be Horde the board game. I'm just mm-hmm. saying, that's what it reminds me of.
That'd be pretty cool.
Thanks for pitching me so easy a theme.
You're welcome.
I enjoyed even just imagining the simplest level of what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play it now. Let's make this game.
Okay.
I have a theme for you.
I'm excited.
And when you're done rubbing your nipples, I would like to give you the theme.
They're lightly
buttered.
So just
let me know.
Okay, I'm good.
Presidential elections.
Oh, I'm so excited right now. For those not in the know, presidential politics is one of my nerdy hobbies that I do. I have a stated goal in my life to read a biography of every president. It has been amended as of November 8th, 2016, to be every president except Donald Trump, because I'm not...
Fantastic.
Because I will not read a biography of him.
If he writes an autobiography and you can confirm that it was not ghostwritten, would you read it just like...
No, because I think it's the f***ing Necronomicon at that point.
Yeah, but
madness awaits anybody who looks at those bleak pages.
What about, like, in your final hours, like, you've been diagnosed with some horrible disease from whatever time that will be, and you're like, I know that reading this book will end my life, but I only have a week anyway, and it's only 13 pages long. Would you read it then? Just like, the doctor's like, your lungs are shutting down. You only have a few hours left. And you're like, I guess I'll read this.
I feel like I'd rather...
Bring me the pamphlet.
I feel like I'd rather spend my final hours rereading, like, Lord of the Rings or something.
Sure.
Seriously,
12 pages? It's in really big letters.
The joke is that Donald Trump is stupid. Mr. Trump, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show. I like presidential politics. I read about it a lot. I have shelves full of biographies. It's nerdy, whatever. And so trying to make a game out of it, that's a challenge right up my alley. There's a game out there called Tammany Hall about...
I thought that was where you might go.
About turn of the century...
Electoral politics
in New York, which I would take some inspiration from, because I haven't played it, but apparently as you're vying for influence in there... There are voters in different districts of the city, or boroughs, I think New York calls them, and each voter has a nationality. So, like, there's English people and Germans and French and whatever, you know, wherever they're from. And so you can curry favor both with districts. So you can say, I'm going to do something that's good for the 9th district,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to get me votes there. But also... for nationality. So you'd be like, I'm going to make the English people like me a lot, or I'm going to convert to Catholicism so the Italians will be on my side.
The thing the game lacks, if I understand correctly, is gerrymandering. You can't redistrict
the districts city. Are as they are. But I like that. What the thing that stands out to me there is that there are multiple avenues to appeal to a given voter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you might be like, I can't compete with, you know, Gary in the North Borough here, but it has a lot of Germans, So I'm going to hang out at a beer hall,
mm-hmm.
and then all the Germans will vote for me.
You might get some Irishmen.
True.
But you have to weigh whether or not to shave or maintain the beard.
Right, right. And so if I'm going to make a game about electoral politics of any kind, I'm going to be like, I need at least two, preferably four or five ways of appealing to any given voter.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to want is some kind of set of tracks that I can track how I'm appealing on multiple spectra,
mm-hmm.
nationality, religious preferences.
Donald Trump, if you're listening, spectra is the plural, which means more than one, of spectrum.
Is it actually the plural, or did I?
You probably made it up.
Fair enough. So I'm gonna want to be able to appeal, and I'm gonna want a slider that lets me move up or down those depending on the actions that I take.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to want each voter or each. Realistically, we can't do each voter. That would be several million tokens.
Right.
But I'm going to want
which could be fun.
Each chunk of voters in a given area to be represented by a token. I'm going to want those tokens to be random for each game. So, like, say I've got 200 tokens in a bag. I'm only going to want to use 100 of random ones in any given game. So the voting base shifts and fluctuates. Mm-hmm. This thing has got to be a real crapshoot for any given play. I want the front face of the token to tell me the publicly available information about that voter, nationality, you know, stated religion, and so on. I want the back of the token to give me information that I'm only going to know after the election is done.
Mm.
So, like, you flip the token over, you're like, okay, well, this voter votes strictly on you, regardless of what was on the front. They only vote on your on whether or not you share a religion with them,
mm-hmm.
or they only vote for people from their home state,
mm-hmm.
and they abstain otherwise. Crap, I'm from Ohio, they're from Alabama. I guess I didn't get that vote.
There was nothing we could have done.
Yeah, even though they had a strong Protestant background and I appealed heavily to that demographic, I still lost it. So that's what I really want out of it, is I want, that's the part of the politics that I think would make for an interesting game,
mm-hmm.
is in trying to read the electorate of the area you're vying for,
mm-hmm.
and find a way to appeal to it without ever really knowing for sure enough information to make that decision truly intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there might be actions you could take that would give you true information about a voting block. Like, maybe sometimes you can look at a token. But never enough that you really have a clear sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wind up, and two, it would need a mechanic that keeps you locked in a pissing match with your opponent about stuff that, by and large, is not going to actually shift the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stuff that you have to respond to,
yeah.
because otherwise it starts to, but the best case scenario for you and your opponent is that it comes out to zero and doesn't have any impact because you both butted heads on it to the point where it didn't matter at all.
I feel like it's interesting because it takes some part of what is, I think, unique to American electoral politics,
uh-huh.
where it's districted and really the individual vote doesn't matter as much as where a district and then a state and then the larger and larger voting blocks or whatever you want to call them actually come out to. But at the same time, you've got like the nitty gritty nonsense. I wonder if it would work better or if it wouldn't statistically make any difference,
mm-hmm.
to use an app instead of just randomly drawing a token and
saying
this region is Protestant and white and
mm-hmm.
whatever versus saying actually model the millions of people who are voting in a given area.
Right.
Probably doesn't actually matter, I guess, at the end of the day.
I don't know. It would be, there might come a point where you want an app just to handle all of the permutations for you.
But what's interesting in that is that you have all those problems, but you cannot change the voting districts. So it's no longer the American
mm-hmm.
party system because you can't say, well, I know that most of the people in this area are Catholics, and so I'm going to slightly change the border of this district
mm-hmm.
to make sure the Catholics are in
right.
a place.
You were saying gerrymandering earlier.
Yeah.
I don't remember if that was on the air or off.
It was on.
Okay, so the other thing that you might do, if you want to make this game stupid, is give a map of your area,
mm-hmm.
and it starts out blank.
Mm-hmm.
And in the you play, say, three rounds before the actual election,
uh-huh.
in which you place some voters and some populaces across it, and then you and your opponent draw districts on it because it's a whiteboard,
mm-hmm.
and you can draw with a dry erase marker, and you do that for three rounds of setting up your voters and redrawing the district, so you can try to pack, and then you actually get to play the game and have your presidential contest.
Nice.
And if you really, really want to make it unbelievably stupid, you include mechanics whereby there are also senatorial and House of Representatives races going on, where so you can also think, I'm in a good position. I've got Gary dead to rights. I'm going to win the presidency. But it looks like his party is going to hold the House. And if I can, it's a better victory if I get the Senate and the House too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take a risk that potentially gets me the House, but might lose me the whole shebang. Because I don't know enough about the populace in this part of the country to be really confident about making a move there. I don't know if it's a good idea.
I don't know. I because of the recent election, I find it wildly entertaining. I feel like in practice, it might take an immense amount of time.
It's an immensely complicated.
If it didn't, I feel like it would be really entertaining.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a one-on-one game. Like, that game is interesting if it's the two presidential campaigns butting heads with each other. I don't even think it's interesting. I don't think it's interesting if you try to do, like, teams where, like, one person's the campaign manager and one's the candidate. I think you've got to have two people.
President versus president.
Yeah. Two people, friends, board game, the sort of people who would sit down and play a two-player game together.
Yeah.
Locked in this stupid, ridiculous contest with shifting nonsense rules and never enough information for anything, scrabbling for every bit of advantage and finding out at the end that it turned out they spent all of their time arguing over what nobody but them cared about.
So it would be probably no fun, certainly no fun for the other players, but it would be interesting after the fact,
mm-hmm.
at least as a statistical model, if not for the game, to have other people running as third parties. And then, like, change up the voting style. So, like, all right, you guys won. Way to go. You won as the Tom party.
Hey, but Gary, then, you want to come over and play a board game? You get to be Gary Johnson.
But then run. But then, no, run it again. The same votes, but be like, but yeah, like, we had three third parties, like a far left, a far right, and a middle of the road.
And a literally insane.
And just run them and see, like, oh, wait, if we had done this as first past the post versus, like, rank your favorites from 1 to 5, just to see how that actually changed things, uh-huh. it could be interesting, mm-hmm. but it would be no fun for the people playing them.
Yeah.
That's the big downside.
There is no fun in being the third party in American electoral politics.
Yeah.
I think that could be, that game needs a lot of mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heavy game, and it's not going to be done in less than 2 hours.
Yeah, probably not.
If it's going to be at all intriguing.
I don't know. If you super oversimplified it, you could probably mm-hmm. do it very quickly, but I don't know how fun it would be anymore, like how engaging.
Yeah, and I think a lot with that, like, if you're going to make a game about electoral politics, your game needs to be enough of a model of electoral politics that certain truths about the way they work can be derived from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, otherwise, I don't think it's worthwhile. Well, I guess that's not a fair statement, because we have plenty of games about war that you can't pick out any truth about fighting a man to death from. So maybe that's not a fair way to put it.
I wonder, as a broader concept,
mm-hmm.
what is worse, losing a game like that, whether it's war or politics, because the choices you made were inherently worse? That were open-ended choices,
mm-hmm.
or because all of the choices are modeled on cards or tokens or whatever, mm-hmm. or dice rolls, and you can say, well, I tried my best, but I didn't get the rolls or the cards that I needed to win either mm-hmm. the election or the war. I guess I prefer the further abstraction or simplification or whatever you want to call it of saying, like, there are, you know, I needed to appeal to Catholics, but I didn't get the Catholic cards or whatever mm-hmm. it is. Being able to blame, as the loser anyway, being able to blame the game components
mm-hmm.
is often a nice cushion to be like, oh, you got me this time.
Well, I mean,
but it's because I didn't get enough Catholic cards.
Well, I mean, is there a difference between saying, I needed the I didn't get enough Catholic cards, so I couldn't appeal to the Catholics, so I lost. And I didn't realize there were quite so many Catholics who only voted for other Catholics, sure. and I lost because I didn't appeal to them because I didn't have that information. Is that different?
I guess that's not different. So I guess the question is...
For any Catholics reading, we don't think you vote that simplistically.
Though you probably do. I mean, let's be honest.
Freaking papists.
Paping all the time. Is that right? Paper.
I assume
paper. I'm thinking of paper.
Oh, yeah.
It papes, just it constantly paping.
Somewhere, my old department head from when I was at Northern, who was a very Catholic man, is shaking his head and is going to give me a stern talking to if we ever meet again.
We'll say purgatory. That's, you know, who knows how long you have to spend in that place, right? Purgatory.
I thought there was like a specific table that you could tabulate.
I don't know. I'm not Catholic. Fair enough. Don't have to go. My Catholic grandfather occasionally would say, I'm so jealous of you guys, you Protestants, because I have to go to purgatory and you don't.
That's fantastic.
I thought so. Well, we're getting close to the end here. So if you have brilliant ideas for either dragons versus spaceships or our presidential American presidential politics, I guess.
The board game.
Election, the board game. You should let us know on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You should let us know on email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You could let us know in the comment section on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and the other one. Tom doesn't know either.
I don't know.
TuneIn Radio. Google Play Music. There That's the go. Other one.
Yeah. Or you can cast your vote at your local polling place for a delegate who will elect a representative, who will elect a second delegate, who will choose a select man, who will pick an assemblyman, who will pick an elector, who will pick the first delegate again, who will repick the elector, who will then cast your vote for what your question will be. Your final question that reaches us will bear no relation to that.
Unless there's a faithless elector in there of the several electors. In which case, all bets are off.
And if all bets are in fact off, I will pick the question personally. That's how it works.
That is how it works.
It's a good system. It's the best system.
Welcome to America. We'll see you next week on the Mildly Alarming podcast.
Good night!
Hey guys, I'm Scott, and I've got a demon here. See, I wanted to make some of my own Gatorade at home, and so I looked up a recipe, and it turned out to be a dark ritual recorded by eyeless nether monks in an ancient time. Should have seen it coming, right? Anyway, once the candle made a human fat melted away, this little turd popped out. Say hello to the people, Scabby.
I will flend your souls!
Yeah, he does that a lot. Anyway, he mostly just yells creepy stuff and raids the fridge, and I don't really want him, so I thought, like, maybe some goth kids would, or a haunted house, I don't know. Lots of uses for a little demon guy, I'd think.
The endless flames will consume you!
Whatever, dude. So, if you want to make me an offer, I just want to get back what I spent on chicken blood and powdered bones. No need to call, just go into a pitch black room and say a number into a mirror. Scabby will let me know what it is. Say bye to the people, Scabby.
Bye to the people!
Yeah, he only said that because it means something gross in demon. Bye now.